If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
So that's when we decided to kind of like go and do out, look at out of state, look where we could actually have more, you know, our money would go a little bit further.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Eric Martel has long been involved in real estate, both in Canada and in the United States. Eric purchased his first multifamily property in Canada while still in college. After graduating in actuarial mathematics, Eric built a career in project management and business consulting. His 25 years of project management experience can ensure that his projects are successful. Eric, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, this is great. This is great. I love digging in on niche, not just operators, but niche asset classes. And I know that you guys do turnkey property, but you kind of focus, it sounds like, more on a different level than a lot of people do. You hear lots of turnkey that's all single family. There's lots of different people in that space. And then you hear people going really large assets, but you guys sound like you found a niche between a hybrid of single family and kind of small multifamily. Is that right?
Yeah. So I think our core business is still the single family turnkey rentals. But yeah, we do have some multifamilies as well that we got into, kind of like the mid-size, I would say, multifamilies.
Right, right. And I know a lot of single family turnkey companies just don't focus on that at all, really. I'd love to hear the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
My very first apartment building I bought when I was like 19 or 18 years old. I was still at university. And yeah, no money down, cash flowing. Yeah, I know, right? So I was at university and I kind of met through a friend of mine, somebody that was a real estate investor, but he was just a regular guy. He was a community college teacher. And he decided to, you know, he wanted to focus on real estate. And then with his means, he had no extra money or anything like that. And he obviously was not making a big salary. And then, he built on his own like a 36-unit apartment building. And last time I saw him, he was building a shopping center because he had bought a piece of land and now he was doing like a shopping center. That was a long time ago. I don't know where that stands now. But at that age, I was not thinking, you know, you're young. So I was not thinking of building a real estate empire. I was not thinking of passive income and financial freedom. But I knew that my parents were basically 9-to-5 kind of people, living paycheck to paycheck, kind of like lower middle class, like many, many of us. And I knew that was not the lifestyle that I wanted for myself. So when this guy showed up, I said, I have to, you know, latch on to this guy and learn as much as I can. So he agreed to be my mentor and show me how to do it. And that's when I started looking for apartment buildings. And I found one after looking at many, many. I probably looked at 400 properties in the area. I was in Montreal at the time, and then I found one that worked. That I was able to get like a seller financing part of it, first mortgage, and then he would have like a vendor take back as a second mortgage. So no money down and cash flowing, 8-unit apartment building. Later on, so I had studied actuarial science, so working on pension plans and stuff like that. And I kind of like that building. Eventually, I sold it a few years later and made a little bit of profit. And I really never thought about that after that. I was kind of working. Then I did independent consulting and I thought, okay, well, this is where I can make some money and all of that. And I thought that was great. And it's really only when I came back to, when I moved to California, not came back, when I moved to California with my family that I had a lot of stock options. I was working for a company that was in this customer relationship management software, you know, and it was, we landed here in like 2000, just before the .com, and I didn't have the team in place or anything like that. And so I decided to sell some of my stock options, exercise some of my stock options, but I kept a whole bunch of it still in the stock market. So I diversified them, but in the stock market. So I kind of, and then the dot-com bubble burst in 2001. And then I lost like a lot of money. I laugh at it now, kind of almost, but it was a lot of money. And then I realized I want to be in control of what's going on. I want to have like passive income. I want to have, and then be able to stop working, because I had been an independent consultant for so long that you can really feel what it's like to be like, you know, if you don't work 1 hour, you don't get paid 1 hour. So you want to go on vacation. You, not only do you have the cost of the vacation, you also have the cost of not working. And it's pretty hard to enjoy your vacation when you know that you feel like you're losing money because you're not working during that time. So that's why I wanted passive income. And I did all kinds of other different businesses, like a gourmet sauce company. We had a low carb grocery store. We had all kinds of different things. And basically, in a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, one of my sons came to me and said, I want to do real estate investing. And that's kind of how we got started and got back into real estate. And sorry, this is a long story.
You're all right. It's good. I like this.
Yeah. So we kind of got into it, looked at doing some flips, looked at doing some, but we were in the Bay Area, in San Francisco Bay Area. And, you know, we couldn't really find the right deals. It was always seemed overpriced, and putting a lot of money on at risk, really, for something that looked like, you know, 6%, 5% returns. It didn't make a lot of sense. And you know, just to give you an example, I mean, the last single family like flip that we looked at in San Francisco, I mean, it was for sale, $750,000 in inner Richmond of San Francisco, if you know the area. And we went to visit. We were invited by the realtor, and he said, "Oh yeah, this is come and see the house. We have an open house this weekend." There was like 300 people. We went there on Saturday. There was like 300 people on that open house. It was insane. The house was completely dilapidated, and the bones were good and all of that. But inside, it was like the roof caved in. The windows were missing. There was rot, mold, you name it. Everything was there. Completely, a complete gut job. So I called the realtor after. I said, How many people are really interested in this property? He had like 40 people that requested the packet, the information packet. And I said, okay. So I put an offer so it was for sale for $750, on the market for $750 list price. And I put an offer for $1.2 million. And I didn't get it.
Holy smokes.
It sold for $1.4 million, which was my break-even point, where I would make no money if I had made that offer. So that's kind of how slim the margins were for me. And so that's when I knew that was in the, it's not going to work out. Like I'm missing some component. I don't have a construction crew. I don't have $2 million to just for that I can put there for free. I have like financing costs and I have all of that. So I was like the small fish in a big pond. So that's when we decided to kind of like go and do look at out of state, look where we could actually have more, you know, our money would go a little bit further. And so we were still looking for passive income. We were looking for passive income at that point. That's when our strategy switched. And then we looked at landlord-friendly states. And that's when we kind of established our investment criteria. And so we landed in Memphis. We looked at Memphis and Cleveland. Our first house we bought in Memphis, single family, I think we paid like $30,000 or $40,000. So, and it was cash flow. We did some renovation. We had to do like $20,000 or so in renovation, refinanced it and all of that. And that's kind of how we got started.
Right. So is Memphis, is that your primary market, or you guys have other markets as well?
So So we have Memphis, Cleveland. We're going back into St. Louis right now, but these are the two markets that where we do our properties.
Talk to us about scaling. Mm-hmm. So you went to Memphis and you said, okay, we want to buy single family properties here. We want to build our own passive income. When did you make that switch from building your own passive income to then presenting these deals to other investors?
Yeah, I mean, we had no intentions of getting into the turnkey business at all. We were just building our own portfolio. Mm-hmm. And then we hit some snags, right? Because we couldn't, the financing of these properties were a little bit more complicated. I was limited to maybe 10 with my wife, like 20 properties that we could mortgage and all of that. And we had a portfolio loan at one point, but then they stopped the portfolio loan programs and all of that. So it was a lot of snags that we hit on that thing. And friends and families were asking us, like, what are you doing? You know, like, we had done all kinds of different businesses and they hadn't heard from us in a while. So it was just like, there was like, what are the Martells up to? And so that's when we started talking about, yeah, it happens quite a bit. Yeah, so that's when we tell them. So I told them that we were doing real estate investment out of state and all of that. And that's when a lot of people were asking. And now they wanted to invest. And then we started selling 1, 2, 3 properties to friends and family. And pretty much that grew into the business that we have today. And we're doing like 10 houses a month right now. And we have a very strong demand.
Right. No, that's great. Talk to us. I mean, there's a lot of different moving pieces there. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously your acquisitions is one, your rehab crews are another, so construction management, and then of course your tenant screening and property management behind that, and then then your disposition, and a lot of times I think those four, and maybe there's even more than that, and you can tell me if there are because I'm not in the turnkey business, but how did you fill those different vacancies as you grew?
I think the key is really this is important at the beginning, especially when you do out of state, is to have a strong team on the ground, right? So property management is key. They're the one that are going to be handling the properties after that. So in the back end, so you don't want to have to deal with these problems. They also have a good insight into the rents that they can get, which areas are good for tenants, you know, and what kind of tenants you can expect in there. So they have a lot of information. We looked at the macro level first, kind of in terms of which state, which city we want to go into that has like business diversification, low unemployment and all of that. But really after that, once you identified, I want to go in Memphis or Cleveland, you want to find a property management company that's going to help you go to the neighborhood level and then understand really what the dynamics are and where are the up and coming areas. And so that's why that was really the first task was to find a property management company, realtor, sometimes a realtor that's going to bring you into the right property management company. And then these people, they have typically same as in multifamily, the property management companies they also have like crews, like construction crews, or, you know, that they can leverage for the renovations and the turnover. And so we kind of tapped into that. And now in Cleveland, we have like 10 construction crews. In Memphis, we started our own Martell Construction that my son is heading. One of my sons actually moved to Memphis last year. And now he's building a couple of crews, construction crews. And he has like 2 right now. He's working on a third one. So managing that. So having the boots on the ground, having people that you can rely on and that are very responsive and that know what they're looking for, this is critical.
Yeah, I would think, and that was smart, obviously bringing in a property management company, you know, being Memphis-based, I can tell you that a lot of these property management companies are also turnkey providers. So I can think of a handful of them right off the top of my head. And so they wouldn't necessarily, and there's lots of good property management companies here that are not necessarily turnkey providers. So I guess you've had to, you know, sort through those and find the ones that were willing to work with you, bring their crews and, you know, renovate and then place the tenants. So these people, these property management companies were really handling it soup to nuts from the time that you said, okay, you know, we've closed on it. Was that property management company also the person doing your acquisitions, or were you guys doing your own acquisitions?
So we were doing our own acquisition. At the beginning, it was, we were basically kind of doing it. I have my other son that was working on it. And then, I had two sons, and the three of us were kind of working on it and doing the acquisition and then handling the rest of it. And but now we have one person that's doing the acquisition, that's somebody that we hired, an employee, to just handle the acquisition. So we're looking to hire somebody to work under him. That was kind of but we acquire these properties from pretty much like wholesalers, could be the realtors. It could also be sometimes the property management company itself,
right,
that has like landlord or owners that they want to get rid of their properties. And so then they call us first, and because they know that we're going to put the deal very, very quickly. And so they like that.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Interesting. And then, so you guys have then elected to, you know, streamline that process and do your own construction on these. I would think in my own experience tells me that quality control is another component to that, you know, it not being in state can be challenging.
That's right. Yeah. And so this is why it's important for these property management companies to have quality control. So we have contractors that go on the site and do the renovations. And then they would, before we do the second payment to the contractor, so the property management company would send somebody there to do quality check, make sure everything is there and then is done right. And then we would move on to the next step and then pay the second slice and et cetera. So there's a lot of quality control. In the end, I mean, they have to sell the property. So it has to look good for them. It's, they don't even see us. All they see is the property. They're the face of the business really in town. So they know that they're contacting this particular property management company. If the property doesn't look good, it doesn't look good on them.
How do you get, I'm like, well, this is gonna be the wrong word, but how do you stay between your investors and the property management company?
Are you talking about the buyers, or are you talking about the people, other people that invest with us?
The people that invest with you. Say I come to you and say, hey, Eric, I'm really interested in Memphis property. And you say, okay, hey, cool, I got this deal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say your property management company brought it to you. Your property management company, you know, they hire or even in this case, you guys do the construction, but then they manage it. Why don't I, as the buyer, eventually just figure out who the property manager is and sidestep you?
Yeah, you could do that. And actually, some people have tried to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that it's time consuming. What we have is we have a lot of processes in place, a lot of systems in place. And it is totally possible for somebody to go in there and then find the opportunity and get a contractor and then do it themselves and get it refinanced and all of that. But it's more time consuming. We make it look so easy, but it takes a lot of effort if you're going to get started. It took us a year to get it to a certain level.
Right.
And now, I mean, at the speed that we're growing and the number of properties that we're doing, I mean, we've been at it for like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as easy as it sounds.
Right. No, that's great. That's a great point. And to further reinforce the value that you bring, I had, this is a personal story. I had a property here that an out-of-state investor bought from me. They were a DIY investor, didn't have their processes in place.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not insure it once they closed on the property. I'd owned it for 4 or 5 years. It was a great property. We kept it in good condition. I really, to this day, don't know what happened, but it burned to the ground.
I mean, my goodness.
3 weeks later, burned to the ground. And the guy calls me, he says, hey, which, I mean, it wouldn't have done him any good anyway. But he said, hey, do you still have insurance on this property? I'm like, no. He goes, I haven't insured it yet. I'm like, one, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
You know, I am sorry for you. Two, even if my insurance were still in place, the deed's in your name, so it's not going to do us any good anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, you won't be able to claim on it. You don't have an insurable cause. Yeah.
I don't own it, so they're not going to write a check to the non-owner.
Yeah.
And third, man, you got to have processes in place for this stuff.
Yeah.
And so if people are, you know, just freewheeling and not doing not doing it, you know, the right things in the right orders, those sorts of wild things happen. I really felt badly for the guy. And again, I still to this day have no idea what happened. I was even disappointed I sold the property. Aside from that, I was like, well, I really don't want to sell this, but he wants it. Okay, I'll sell it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible.
Yeah, the center of us for our process, we have like a customer relationship management software that we're using. And then every stage of the process of the life cycle for our properties, we have emails, notifications, and stuff like that go on, including, you know, insurance agent introduction. So there's automatic emails when we sell the property, automatic email to the insurance company, property management, escrow, et cetera. So we don't have to deal with it. We forgot to introduce you to the insurance company or something like that. So everything is done automatically. And so we know that it's done right.
Right. No, that's great. Eric, let's jump into the final four here if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I think it's build the right team around you. Did you want a longer sentence?
Nope. Okay. I can't think of a more succinct way to put it. Build the right team around you. I like that. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I read a lot.
That's great. Do you read just general business books or is it mindset books or what? Let's ask this one then on top of that. What are you currently reading?
So I'm reading a lot about kind of like the understanding the economy and stuff like that. For example, I just read Ray Dalio. He has a book that has come out or is coming out, but you can go on his website. So this is something After Principles. And he really talks about the history of the economy and the... So I think it's very interesting. So anything around finance and all of that, you know, even though I studied finance at university, I still keep learning new things about finance. So it's very interesting.
That's great. When it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
So I'm actually starting a Martell Foundation in March. So yeah, that's what we're going to be doing.
That's fantastic. And Eric, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we do that?
So the best is to contact me on Instagram, E_Martell, or on Facebook, eric.martell.ca.
Eric, thanks so much for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.